The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, NetWealth Investments Limited, ABN 85090 569 109, AFSL 230 975, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
I'm Patrick, Head of Technology at professional services firm Collins SBA. I'm a former financial advisor who just loves solving business problems and creating better client experiences using technology. Join me each week as we unpack the tech on offer to advice professionals, stay on top of tech trends, and help you break free from the analysis paralysis experience when building and maintaining a great tech stack.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by NetWealth. Imagine a world where your clients have the best wealth technology at their fingers. With NetWealth's next-gen client portal and mobile app, clients can view and manage their portfolio, assets, and accounts wherever they are. By adding external bank and property feeds to their NetWealth account, they can get a true picture of their wealth. And by giving them the ability to transact and manage their cash, they can feel in control of their wealth. A world of client engagement awaits. Discover it at netwealth.com.au/woo.
To give listeners of the Advice Tech podcast another avenue to solve technology problems that matter most and efficiently evaluate the landscape of Advice Tech providers, Ensemble has launched an Advice Tech space on its platform. If you want to know how your advice peers are solving their tech challenges, big and small, it's the place to go. Head to the Ensemble platform or use the link in the show notes to join today.
Today we're tackling one of the most overlooked but critically important areas in financial advice, estate planning. It's something advisors know they should be doing more of, but often ends up in the too high basket. And in the middle of that sits a huge gap between the financial plan, the will, and everything else in a client's life. Joining me today is Colin Zhao, co-founder of BillWill, a platform helping advisors turn estate planning into a living, ongoing service and not just a document. We'll explore the opportunity that this creates, how tech is reshaping the space, and how advisors can better support clients and their families when it matters most. I started by asking Colin what the oldest piece of tech he owns is and whether he still uses it.
The oldest piece of tech that I own is a piece of software that decodes the key of music tracks. And I used to DJ, and when that came out, it was quite the thing because it completely changed the way in which I mixed music. And I still, on the side, make music mixes and use key change mixing to make it sound very smooth. So yeah, I still use it.
Wow,
10 years older.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? So is that more like it's ensuring a really smooth transition to the next
absolutely.
Track?
So it's basically mixing when you're mixing, you know, house music and whatever. Sounds a lot better if you do harmonic mixing. So there's sort of certain keys that naturally go together. And so the software just listens to the track, codes the key so that you can make choices to either keep it in the same key or make step changes, but in a more conscious fashion.
Well, do you run with DJ BillWill, or do you have a stage name, or what's that go there?
No, I'm deeply in retirement at this point. It's mostly for friends and friends and weddings and birthday parties. But
that's awesome.
But that wouldn't be a bad Bill. It wouldn't be a bad DJ name at all.
Oh, absolutely. I'll get you on speed dial after this, Colin. So if we fast forward, I think you mentioned it was sort of 10-year-old tech, maybe a bit longer. But is there maybe one or two ways that you're using AI like right now, either sort of personally or professionally?
One or two ways. I think my husband thinks I'm in a deep relationship with Claude. No, I think I use it a heck of a lot these days. I think for me, certainly the things that I don't necessarily have to ask other people to do, so it's just really expanded my bandwidth. I think the thing that I'm using for at the most at the moment is really helping me build out some of my communications flows, so my sort of mail sequences and so on, and actually also building some really great client collateral. Every partner that we bring on board, I actually give them collateral in their own branding, which is a very neat party trick. I should probably not tell other people that I tell other people about it, but it really does actually help make the whole process a lot easier. So I'm loving Claude at this point.
Love it. So yeah, just confirming. So Claude is your sort of go-to. Did you dabble in sort of ChatGPT, et cetera?
It started with ChatGPT. Claude was just a bit of a step change in terms of Claude started for me as a better writer and then a better document producer. ChatGPT is still the home of my recipes. So yep. ChatGPT is very good for, sort of helping me out in the kitchen. And occasionally if I want something quick and to the point and blunt. But I don't need anybody telling me I'm doing a good job. In fact, I like the challenge. And no matter how much I try to get ChatGPT to challenge me, give me the AI that doesn't write with the M dash all the time, and I'll be moving across to that one even sooner.
Oh, I think the most common phrase of this year or last year is "you're absolutely right." So, my goodness, it's crazy, and it's also the muscle memory of I do the same. Like I'm running with both. Used to be ChatGPT or OpenAI. I'm on the Claude path now, but it's just weird how you open it up, and sometimes it's the same in terms of for some reason. ChatGPT just fires back that much quicker that you just like, I need like that in my brain is like, that's quick answer. Whereas Claude is like so thoughtful and intentional.
Yeah. I mean, the behavioral scientist in me is deeply sus about that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can, whether it's actually thinking and whether it needs the time or whether we now just perceive it as a much more thoughtful answer because we had to wait for it. I there'd be some interesting studies that I think you could do in that space.
The framing of the weight
is what makes us value it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably a whole division working on those, just the optics of it all. That's a great point. So, Colin, thanks for coming on the show today. So can we start with just a comment about estate planning or meaningful estate planning, like having that conversation or a service in a financial planning, accounting or professional service business? It's something that I think advisors or financial advisors in particular know they should be doing more of, but it just ends up in the too hard bucket for whatever reason. What were you seeing in the industry or the profession that made you want to build a tech solution for it? Or did you start there? How did it all come to be?
I've been consulting in the financial advice space for the better part of more than a decade now, most in the world of brand and client experience. So that was the world that I knew quite well. For me, actually getting into the estate planning side of things was a lived experience moment when I lost my dad in 2020. And he'd created for us an amazing 70-page letter called The Letter from Your Dead Husband. That had 70 pages of incredible information. He was a lawyer and he knew what the will or the financial plan wouldn't have. And within that was an oversight of one bill that he didn't know who was paying. I'm sure we'll get to how I've gone to resolve that in a moment. But that's really what got me into it. To bring it back into the financial advice context, initially I thought that this would be a natural product for an extension of estate planning and become the lawyer my father always wanted me to be. And we still do work with lawyers, but what we also found was this natural fit, going back to the people I'd worked with for the better part of more than a decade, because what nobody tells you, firstly, estate planning is much more than wills. It is really around, for us, we view estate planning as, particularly in the Bill Will frame, as a full view of your financial, practical, and personal life. Those are the three lenses that we help people plan for. And the will really only touches on a very important but very narrow frame of that. And it's a very complex frame that it solves for, and it does a great job at that. But there is this huge gap. I say there's this gap between the will and the financial plan, otherwise known as the client and their life. And that's what we solve for. So I saw that gap. I realized that other people weren't necessarily going to have the time or the luxury or the forethought of having someone who knew what we would need. And I became very passionate about making sure that other people had access to that kind of planning. Because the solution is, as it should be, it should feel simple. It's not effortless. It takes a while to put together, but it should feel simple. And we make it simple. People go, I'd never thought of that. And of course, if I don't tell people where the key for the passwords is, how is anyone going to find that? If I don't, I read these articles sometimes about, assets getting lost, and it's just the simplest thing to solve if people think about it.
You have one place for it and the communication is there as well, and just the foresight and the forethought. So how would you, if we sort of went down the elevator pitch path of, thinking from an advisor lens, like what is the solution? What are they, if they sign up to Bill Will as a practice, or just take us through, the product at a high level?
Yeah. Well, as a good elevator pitch, I should sketch the problem first, shouldn't I? Which is that obviously, the two graphs I put in front of financial advisors. The first is the wave of the great wealth transfer, the boom is dying. And then the second one I put in place is the the inverse wave of Gen X retirees who started coming into the market this year. And so this fundamental demographic shift where 60 to 80% of boomer clients their beneficiaries will find a different advisor. So they need legacy services. And then when we think about who's beginning to plan for retirement, well, these are people with complex digital lives that are often invisible to their families and the people living in their own homes. And so it's kind of the perfect storm of, you know, from having been quite a fringe idea when I started 2 years ago, I'm now getting people, when I show them those two charts and I say, well, you know, we're actually talking about pretty much your entire book here. Who's got the money? Who's getting the money? And this massive information gap. And I suppose where financial advisors have an edge is they see their clients every year. They already have a running start with a lot of the data from a financial perspective. And what we give to our advisor partners is, well, it's a simple tool, but it does a lot of things. It allows the advisor to meet the next generation in a way that is giving a service, not selling. It allows the advisor to meet the needs of the Gen X retirees in a way that frankly just isn't being met properly in terms of organizing their lives. And the help that we provide saves the client 200 to 300, the client's family 200 to 300 hours of hunting for information. So that's, if we want to talk about ethical best interest obligations, I can't think of a better way to demonstrate it than that. But at the same time, it puts you at the heart of that legacy conversation. So that as wealth is transferring, you are the repository of all knowledge. And that's an incredibly trusted and valuable place to be. And so it really just expands the role that they already have. And this is the shift is people go, oh, I need to get into legacy planning. And I go, actually, you've got the basics of it sitting within your practice, sitting in within your data. And, you know, as you know, we're working on solutions that will make it a push of a button to really expand that conversation. So yeah, and then it's this way of keeping clients engaged from year to year. I know that when my advisor says to me, you know, what's changed, I look at him blankly and go, nothing. And then if I start getting asked some pointed questions around, you know, household or job or etc., which we cover, then suddenly, oh, well, you know, you've renovated a house, you bought a car, et cetera, started a business. Suddenly you start these kinds of conversations. So it's a prompt to talk about people's lives in a way that gets the conversation away from the percentage figure on the growth of the assets, because that is what it is. And I always say to advisors, if you're doing your job well, the annual review can become an incredibly boring conversation. And that's a problem.
Oh, you're totally right. There's so many layers to this, Colin. So where to start is challenging for me, or where to go, which rabbit hole or lane to go down. If we think about like the practical aspects for an advice firm, are they engaging you as a business to use the Bill Will portal? Are they white labeling it? What do they sort of come and get and then distribute to their client base?
So in December, we launched our white label advisor portal. And the way sometimes your clients are the best ones at describing your service better to you, you know, because we set about creating a great user experience. And my background's in behavioral science. I knew this needed to be incredibly easy. So the first problem we solved was how do we make it easy for clients to keep their information up to date, which we've created a great system for. In December, we launched our white label advisor portal, which now means that the advisor initiates the account. And the portal, it's on our URL for data security purposes, but it carries their brand. And we support them with advisor branded communications. And they maintain access to that client account. The client can turn off their access at any time. So it's the client's data. But for as long as that relationship is alive and as long as, you know, and even after the person is not, they have access to that information, which is critical. So they can see changes. Yeah, you know, in real time as the client makes them if they want to. So yeah, it goes out under the client's brand, under the advisor's brand. It produces a beautiful document which also carries the advisor's logo as well. And so it's both a digital service, a physical artifact, and an incredibly valuable resource for both the advisor to learn more about their clients, but also for the families when the inevitabilities of death or incapacity occur.
Love it. And So just to talk a bit more about the practical aspects, you mentioned the physical or the tangible artifact that it generates. That is not a will, is it? That is what's called a letter of wishes?
No. Yeah, we call it a letter of wishes because that was the closest in the lexicon of, you know, testamentary style documents. But it isn't a testamentary document. It is in binding. That information flows on to the power of attorney and or executor, but is not part of the will, which becomes public record. So it can be used as a separate way of briefing the executor on everything else that needs to happen within a life outside of the distribution of assets, which is what the primary focus of the will is. Even estate lawyers are coming on board going, all of these random requests that people want to shove into the will, they now have a good place for them to go, a place where they can offer their clients the peace of mind that the stuff is recorded and that it will be passed on to the people that need it.
Love it. So just to play out what I imagine would be quite a common scenario is you've come in for annual review, or even, you know, your new client, the advice firm uses BillWill as their portal or estate planning service or tool to get things done and to offer that service and to cover off on all the things you explained. They will traditionally raise, have you thought about your estate plan? And the answer is always no, or we did, or it was, you know, 10, 15 years old, don't even know where it is. Or it might be in the, you know, the back of the filing cabinet of some lawyer's office in another state or something like that. So the actual natural progression would be we go through that process and, using all the data that we've already got, I know we'll get to the open banking sort of integration part shortly, which is really powerful. But we produce what we agree on is the letter of wishes for that client. And then that artifact typically could also be a really warm introduction to whether it's the lawyer that you have a referral relationship with as a practice on a silver platter, go and get the actual legal documents done.
Absolutely. If they want to use it that way, for a lot of clients, they have a decent enough will in place.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the things that we do is, one of the things that I'm really clear about is there's a really good synergy between estate planning and financial planning. And we're there just to provide that bridge of the missing information. So yes, it can be used to brief an estate lawyer. That's not its designed purpose, but it will have a lot of information in it that the estate lawyer would need: beneficiary details, asset and liability details, etc. All of that stuff would be in there. They can use it for that purpose, but its primary role is to be the living register and document vault for that client. So it is both a digital repository with documents that can be stored, and then it produces the physical asset, which can be used, is a PDF that's downloadable at any time.
Awesome.
Just to give that sort of sense of tangibility.
And then, going back to the digital repository component of it, mentioned really briefly the open banking part before. This feels like the bill part of the bill will. Can you take us through how you approach that and what that involves?
What that involves. Well, when BillWill began its life, it wasn't actually designed around the 70 pages of my father's foresight. I unfortunately designed it around his one oversight, which was a single bill that he didn't know that he was paying, that took us 9 months to shut. And that in my state of grief, I spent a lot of time fighting with a company to get a refund of the $20 he'd been paying for a very, very long period of time. And it was just a unnecessarily cruel experience for all concerned, particularly the people I probably wasn't very nice to at the other end of the call center. So I just thought, there's some, all around some societal good to be done here. So when BillWill began its life, it was a will for your bills, an open banking enabled app that used your open banking information to find your bills and subscriptions. You leave instructions for their closure or transfer. And when death or incapacity occur, we get authority and we do that for the families. And so we actually provide that service. We've handled about 20 of them because we're really a relatively new business at the moment, and I'm constantly surprised at the gratitude that we get for just that really simple service. It's a really good reason to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
But also the unnecessary complexity that we still wade into. My dream for that service is to be one click. But there are a variety of reasons why, some of which are reasonable and some of which are just matters of different vendors operating in different legacy manners. But we do make it significantly easier. If a client just wants us to shut down 10 bills, we can pretty much do that within a course of two emails. If they need us to handle a series of complicated transfers of electricity and insurance and titles and all of that kind of thing, it's a little bit more involved. But we're there to explain to them in one email all of the things that need to happen and all of the things that they need to do. So that was where Bilwell began its life, and that's why open banking was so fundamental to it. What it also means to the estate, though, is that we can actually provide date of death balances, and we're also providing an accurate log of the bank accounts that are there. And, you know, a probate application can be undone if assets are discovered of significant value. And worse situations happen where, for example, if a legitimate debt, for example, is discovered after the assets have been distributed, that can cause real, real pain. So just having this roadmap, and we're really clear about it. We call it the roadmap, not the keys to your life. So it just shows you where everything is. And it at that top level tells you things are there, and there. In some cases, like the banking information, we can provide that information directly. In other cases, it's just a matter of pulling those strands together. But it's the stuff that gets lost that causes so much trouble.
Totally. I'm really intrigued by the, it's essentially a concierge service, isn't it, in terms of the bills being terminated. Is that something, maybe it's more on the sort of direct-to-consumer pathway, but is that something that like the actual person who you're building that estate plan for is like, oh, I think my surviving spouse or team of family behind would appreciate that, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's included with every Bilwell plan that is set up. That's part of it. We do have it available as a sort of a standalone service, which advisors can access off their advisor portal as well if they want to. So it's there. As a standalone service, it's both surprising in the to the extent that it helps people, but what'll often happen is sometimes families may decide to sort of take. I know one person who's like, no thanks, I'd rather be through that process of grieving was actually managing the stuff, you know. But so there you go.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah. No, it's obviously everyone's different. I think I can imagine the jarring nature of having to repeat yourself like in that same email of this person's passed, or just getting on the phone and just reliving it just for whether it was a $20 sort of Netflix subscription or something like that. So I'm totally with you.
Even I get asked once I've explained who I am and what I do, and the fact that I'm, representing a person who's died, will get asked to speak to the account holder from time to time. It still happens. And you'll get lost in the call center loop, and then we need to speak to the account holder for that, and they'll forget how the conversation started.
The old script.
Innocent mistake, but it's in the script, and that is traumatic if you've recently lost somebody. We talk about the 200 to 300 hours of pain that we save people, but I sometimes feel like it underplays how painful some of those hours can be.
Yeah, no, it's a really striking and important point. Can I ask you about there's a big part of like not so much SaaS or software or tools that we buy or utilize, but their use is when we're not here anymore. So I want to sort of link it to my understanding is you've got the legacy contact. How does that sort of play out in terms of someone does pass away? There's a legacy contact or someone who's really, now able to log in, et cetera. How does that sort of play out in reality of accessing the portal?
So the legacy contact can never log in to see your data. It's a key security feature. The only person that can log in to see your data is your advisor if you've granted them permission. So the advisor defaults with permission on, but part of our terms and conditions is that the advisors make people aware that they can turn that access off. So that's the security and the privacy method. The legacy contact does not get access to the information at sign up. They don't necessarily even get access to that information upon death or incapacity. The legacy contact's job is to let us know of your death or incapacity. At that point, we will ask for them to verify a proof of power of attorney or proof of executorship, even if we've got it on file. We'll also put a call through to the relevant advisor to make sure that we're all comfortable that this is being triggered under the right circumstances. If all of that is good and we have a legacy contact who happens to be also the executor, which is often the case, then we will then pass on the information. I should be clear, there are a couple of subtleties within that. We pass on funeral plans, pet care plans, an important contact and inform of death list immediately, because that is time-sensitive information and it's not a massive violation of privacy. Then once we get a death certificate, we can begin to process the bill closures and transfers. and we release the rest of the information so that the rest of the probate application can be put together. So there's a sequence to it, but it's not a who am I giving access to my information. There are we're not the only vault out there. When I looked at some of the vault solutions, there's lots of sort of complex, this person can see this and that person can see that. One of the things that I am very passionate about is matters of financial abuse, matters of elder abuse, and so on. And we consult with those people pretty regularly to make sure that we're well within the lines where abuse is minimized. We are, I think, one of less than 100 businesses that actually have terms and conditions that preclude financial abuse on our platform. I can't believe everyone doesn't have this, but it's an initiative called Respect and Protect, respectandprotect.com.au. I happily give her a punt because it's essential to us and the way in which it's done, that information is passed on but under very controlled, proper circumstances.
That's a great initiative, far out. And then if we think about, like, I'm just, once again, I kept going back to sort of practical examples. Think about a client or a couple. Does that typically mean they get set up with their own sort of Bill portal?
Yeah. I mean, I think interestingly, in consultation, we learned that, for example, joint bank accounts aren't necessarily an optimal situation for a client to be in. And similarly with the Bill Will, we've adopted a similar kind of logic. So I do know that there are some profiles that are a couple, but they are set up as an individual. What I find in most households these days is there is a very complicated rabbit warren of their own creation of how couples handle, their household administration. And so for some, they want to kind of put it all into one bucket. For others, they like to keep their privacy and just keep doing what they do. I think it's more less about a matter of privacy from a spouse and more a matter of just managing. What we see is that, often there'll be two accounts that are set up. It's not a very expensive service from that perspective. And so one will set up one with the other legacy contact as a, and vice versa. Or if they want to combine it into one account and they do that, then, if the primary account holder dies, well, then the legacy contact is holding that request for access. And if the legacy contact is the first one to die, you just assign a new legacy contact. Very simple, very secure.
No, awesome. And then if you think about, I'm just trying to think about like whether we could open up to any sort of case studies or feedback from advice firms or even just end users of the platform. Have you had any sort of feedback that you can share with us about how they're using it or anything like that?
Yeah, I think the thing that surprises people and the one thing that I hear the most consistently is, this job looks and feels like something that's really massive and difficult. But once they get it, because we've got such an easy modular structure, once you do two modules, you do 10. It's sort of, you get into the zone of it. I call it Marie Kondoing your administrative life. And once you start getting into the folding of each shirt, you just got to do the whole drawer. Maybe that's just me. Maybe it was just me during COVID probably. But you get the drift. And I think that's the most common one is they go, I think this is going to be hard for me to set up for my clients. And I need to sit down and really get my head around it. And then when they do, they go, I don't know what the fuss was. It was really quite simple. So that's the thing that I think is most sort of interesting for us. The number one battle is constantly procrastination. And it feels like the kind of job you can do tomorrow. And I talk, when I talk about do some sort of behavioral science talks around procrastination, tomorrow never comes because when tomorrow comes, it's today then. And so, we have this sort of never-ending pressure to just push things out to tomorrow. And this is one of those things that people just have a tendency to do that over.
I can imagine, particularly once again on the open banking side, that couldn't be much easier than that. The only issue I've found with the consumer data right is the need to renew your consent every 12 months, which I assume becomes a bit challenging.
It is and it isn't. I mean, it's good for us because it's sort of, like we have sort of fortnightly engagement mails that we send out to our users because every module has its own story to tell. But, so the annual renewal for us is probably, a feature rather than a bug in terms of this information does go out of date and you do need to kind of think about it. So it's a good prompt. I mean, I think, you know, the standard things with open banking in that, you know, not all of the banks' experiences are uniformly the same. So from an advisor trying to help people, one of the things, though, that we're finding with open banking, if I'm told it's not working, most of the time, I think, you know, most of the time it is about the fact that people think it's a joint account and it's not.
Oh, well.
They just have secondary access to it. Right. And that's happened several times. And what it's uncovered for us actually is another role for the advisor in terms of understanding how your bank accounts are set up, because best you find this stuff out now while you're alive than what happens routinely, particularly in the space of credit cards, is, you know, one primary cardholder, secondary cardholder, primary cardholder dies, secondary cardholder's card shuts down. So these are the things that are actually really, really critical. And if you're thinking about legacy planning and estate planning as a holistic perspective, how you structure your bank accounts in a way that your loved ones have access to money after you die is a fairly fundamental question. And ironically, one of the hidden features of, you know, some of the quirks of open banking is that it's surfaced these issues early while people are doing it.
No, that's great insight. So I was just going to ask you too, like, there's still not that many providers out there, unless you're using, I think there's probably two sort of we do it all portal solutions in terms of from a financial planning perspective. I imagine it might be the reverse that people would expect, in terms of it would make sense to go through your process and use the platform and do that full comprehensive fact finding on the Billwheel platform, because you've got that actual balance and the transactions. That is actually the source of truth, rather than traditionally it's like, oh, we're bringing in this new portal, got to jam all the information in there. Does that make sense? Have you found that?
Yes. I mean, I don't think we're an onboarding portal yet. And I definitely thought about it, because any way that we can turn ourselves into an essential rather than an extra is a good thing for us. However, for us, it is about getting people to think about their entire lives. A lot of information we ask for isn't really relevant for a financial advisor, certainly not relevant in a new relationship where you've never met the person.
Yeah, good point.
And so certainly, you know, it wouldn't be that hard for us to customize an onboarding flow for just that information only. And that may be something we do going forward. But this is really a high trust environment and is really about capitalizing and strengthening deep client relationships, rather than that mythical unicorn fact find that everybody thinks is perfect, easy, and suits everybody's practice, which I don't think is necessarily out there. I'm sure someone watching the pod will disagree with me vehemently on that, but there we go.
No, I'm totally with you. I think that it just reminded me of like how, like we think about getting data in there and clients going their own way. And I'm sure, I've been an advisor for a long time now, but I'm sure advisors having lots of conversations where clients are bringing to them something they've done on ChatGPT or Claude or whatever AI tool they're using. How do you sort of see AI and Billwheel sort of working together? Is there a place for it? How do you sort of see that playing out?
I mean, I think because obviously Claude and I have had chats around how AI is going to destroy my business, right?
Totally.
Hasn't everyone had a conversation with Claude about that? Or their AI of choice? I mean, I think one of the things that is, I suppose, a good thing about our business is that it's about people's individual data footprints, right? And that's not necessarily just sort of a gleanable service that you can, but there are certainly ways in which AI is going to make the ingestion of that data significantly easier. And we are a structured database, and our ability to pull data from unstructured sources, I think is something I'm very, very excited about. But, we sort of tested things like if you put the will in, will it get the beneficiaries out and so on? And so there are things like that are definitely simple experiments that we'll continue to run. We already deploy some AI on the platform, actually, to help people write letters of care to loved ones. And I know that sounds like the most intimate part of it. It probably is. And that's probably why people were battling to do it.
Yeah.
And what we realized is that people were answering the question back to front. If I ask the parent to write a letter of care for the guardian, the space that they go to immediately is, I'm not alive and my child is. And they're 8 or 6. And that's a really emotionally confronting space to go to. So, you know, some psychological training, we flip the scripts on that with the chatbot. So first it doesn't say, here's an open space, write a letter of care to Johnny. It's a chatbot that structures people through questions that they can answer about their child in the here and now. Tell me about their interests. Tell me what makes them laugh. Tell me about their allergies. Questions that are super important, but also super easy to answer. And then we take them into the projection stuff of what you want for the future. And by the time you've sort of got into the flow of that, it's a lot less confronting. And then it pops up a draft and you then, you know, make it your own. So yeah, AIs, and obviously on the coding side, there are things that my amazing team do. They seem to be a lot happier with the world these days as well. I think they seem to be enjoying this new paradigm of coding as well.
No, absolutely. Anything's possible. I love how that's a guided flow, Colin, and like it just alleviates that, not just the blank canvas anxiety of there's no data in there, but as you mentioned, the emotional roller coaster and journey of just confronting that. Oh, I'm with you. And yeah, using that as a tool to support that, I think makes a lot of sense. So as we sort of are running out of time, but I'd love to ask you, like, in general, like, where are you taking Buell over the next 12 months? Is there anything that you want to talk about, I guess, the direction of the platform or roadmap or how you're sort of thinking about it in general?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's sort of, for us, the principle of, you know, making things, this process can always be made easier, both from the advisor onboarding perspective and from the client's data maintenance perspective. So there are, you know, anything that fits within that particular remit in terms of making the product easier is definitely on the roadmap, and AI is playing a big part of that. But it's also, you know, partnerships and so on. For me, it's really around, you know, we have rocketed from 0 to 60 advisors on the platform since December. It's supposed to be a soft launch. It's gone really well. Really exciting to see that kind of traction beginning to happen. And so now it's really what used to be for us, the fact that we sort of sit awkwardly between estate and financial planning is now actually the thing that I think both parties value about us. So how we can play a more meaningful role in connecting that professional services ecosystem is something that excites me a lot. And we're beginning to sort of be able to kind of have the kinds of numbers that begin to make that a meaningful claim. So I'm pretty pumped for the next 12 months. I think we've got the right product in the right space. And I think the demographic shifts are just beginning to click into place for financial advisors, particularly where they're going, this is something that's a meaningful extension of the conversations I'm already having.
Oh, it's natural as well. I think it's fantastic. And congratulations on what you built and your success so far. I've really enjoyed today's discussion. Colin, how can someone get involved with Buell? Like, how can they learn more about it, reach out to you or the platform? How do they get started?
Absolutely. Buellwill.com.au, BuellWill, exactly like it sounds. And there are sections on the website for both estate and financial planners. You can apply directly off the website for your own branded advisor portal, and there are full contact details there. But if you do that, we can literally have you set up as an advisor within 5 minutes of me seeing the email and having the 5 minutes to get it all happening. But it'll happen pretty quickly.
You beauty. Colin, thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you for your time.